Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California, with our thought for today. Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. Wow. If we could all open our eyes so beautifully that we could see that, we would be miracle people. Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. Now, if we could come to that realization, we would be fantastic. We would be really fantastic. Then we would look at the successful people and say, yes, that's me. We would look at the happy, healthy, wonderful people and say, yes, that's me. We wouldn't say, oh, I wish I had their health and their wealth and their happiness and their joy. We wouldn't say that. We'd say, yes, that's me. And what happens when we begin to say, yes, that's me? Well, then we not only experience it, which we've been doing, but we know that we are experiencing it. We know we're enjoying it. We know we're having a good time. We know that life is wonderful because we claim it, name it. We indicate that it's ours. Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. Now start looking at your assets. You are alive. Well, how many other people on the face of the earth are alive?
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit. What is it now? 6, 7, 8 million, 8 billion, that is? 8 billion people on the face of the earth. Isn't that great? 8 billion people? All right. How many people on the face of the earth are dead? Yeah.
None.
Yeah. There are a lot of bodies on the face of the earth that are dead. And a lot of bodies under the earth that are dead. And a lot of bodies that have been cremated who are dead.
Hopefully.
Huh?
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Well, you laugh. But don't laugh, because you're more true than not. There is no death. Yes, Sylvia, there is no death. Yes, there is a Santa Claus. There is no death. And we have to remember that. Because we think that there's death just because some people seem to die. Well, what they've done is just to change their clothes. They've taken off this one cloak and put on another. And they're so obtuse, so blind, so blank, not to realize that we are living in an infinite number of lifetimes right at this moment, and all right at this moment. And we, in an illusion, die in one lifetime or another. Maybe we die in 1,000 lifetimes. Quite likely that's what we do. We die in 1,000 lifetimes at one time. And we don't think a thing about it. Because we merely slip into whatever the awareness is we choose to slip into of another lifetime. And they're all happening in this same instant. You cannot say happening, because it's only the now. And a now doesn't have an ing, does it? A now doesn't have an active verb. You cannot have an active verb in the now, because it has no past and has no future. An active verb has a past and future. So you cannot even have a verb to be. Even that one messes us up. But think about it. What do we say? Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. So what are your assets? Say, for instance, you choose to shuffle off this mortal coil, as Shakespeare so pleasantly put it. What would you do? How are you shuffling off this coil? I remember at my mother's death, I was there, and we were talking, and finally she says, Herbie, I want to go. I said, well, that's up to you, Mom, but we love you very much, and if you just work on it a little bit, you could get your body back in shape, you know. She says, I want to go. And I said, well, whatever you want to do. She says, you're holding on to me. I said, I'm holding on to you? She says, yes, you're holding on to me. Now, what was she saying? She was saying that she was holding on to me. You see, she was holding on to me. She liked to be with me, and I liked to be with her. We had a good relationship. We did a lot of nice things together and learned together, and her path and my path were quite similar in many ways on our spiritual way. And she says, you're holding on to me. And I said, well, Mom, if you want to go, go. Just remember, Jesus said, in his Father's house are many mansions, and there's one just for you. And poof, she went. Right at that moment. And her ectoplasm left her body, and I could see it. I'd seen it several times before, but I could see it very clearly. I knew that there was no 3 days waiting for her, you know. She wasn't going to hang around for those 3 days because she had decided to go. A lot of people haven't decided to die when they die, when they leave their body. Just a bit, I got a few more things to do. I got to write some more bills, more checks, and what have you. Well, your heirs will take care of all that. But what is this all about? Now, what happened to me when I saw Mother die? What happened to me? If that's, what do we say, every asset I have, I see in everyone around me. What is that? What did I see in Mother when she died? I saw in her that she released herself from all of the work that she had laid out for herself in purifying and perfecting her body. All of her life, she tried to be thinner. All of her life, she had trouble with one eye. One eye would bounce back and forth, so she had to have it clipped so it would stay in one place. And all of her life, she had five kids who kept her quite busy with caring about them and their families and remembering all the grandchildren and great-grandchildren and everything else like that. All of her life, she wanted to study philosophy, study religion, study the deeper things of life. And she spent quite a bit of time doing it, in fact, quite a bit of time. And the books that she had were legion. But she was doing these things all the time. And I was doing these things too, on a different level, but I was doing these things too. Now, her body was okay, but it was giving her problems. And she wasn't paying attention to her body. She was paying attention to a few other little things. A few of her children were giving her problems, and these problems that she had disturbed her very greatly. And so she just let her body go to pot, you know, and that's a shame. That's really a shame. Because I know I worked with her. I was in religious science at the time and studying acupressure, acupuncture, and all the other good things like that, and reflexology. And I did those things on her, and I'd say, Mom, this is your problem. You know, Mom, this is your problem. It's your heart, it's your lungs, it's your this, your that. And the doctors had told her other things. And so she went in, and sure enough, those were her problems. Because the acupressure and reflexology and so, that shows what your areas of pain are. And so she had those things worked on. But then as soon as she had those worked on, then she got others. Because she was bound and determined to cut out of this body. She'd had enough of this. Now, why didn't she just take her body and go? Well, she didn't want her body. Why didn't she just get out of her body sooner and pass away? Well, she felt a responsibility. And the responsibility apparently was to me, Herbie, let me go. And I didn't know I was holding her or letting go. All I knew is that we were a good team. We worked well together and studied well together and learned well together and did beautiful things, you know, together or separately. Well, she was an asset for me. because I learned through her that I didn't have to die. I didn't have to have my body die at such an early age. I could live another year or two, or three or four, or 20 or 100, or 1,000, or whatever, and live in a perfect body. But you see, the assets we have from those around us may not be what they seem to be. They may not be what they appear to be, because what they appear to be in the world's eyes are what the world feels are important. Now, what was the most important thing for Mother to do in the world's eyes? To live. The world says you got to live. To die is nothing. You're now over. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. And it's done with. All your games and fun is over. See, that's what the world thinks. And so, in the eyes of the world, she should get well. In the eyes of the world, she should have a meaningful life. And when people become vegetables and live in rest homes and sit there and their tongue hanging out and have no interest or anything in life, then what does the world say? They should die. But is that right? Should anyone do anything, or should they do what they want to do? Now, we speak so kindly about our euthanasia that we do for dogs and cats and sometimes people. Helping people to die, helping dogs and cats to die and so forth. When a cat gets too old and it's no longer enjoying life, we put it to sleep. Same with a dog. And we think, oh, aren't we wonderful? Aren't we great? And we are. We are. But you see, we are finished using this old dog, this old cat. We're finished using this vehicle or this person or this thing that has been a joy to us, and we want to get something young and vital, something young and vital to remind us to be young and vital, to be dynamic. And so what's the first thing we do when we put a dog to sleep? We get another one, or a cat or whatever. And they're usually young. They're usually not even potty trained, you know. And so we have to go through that whole rigmarole again. And that's great. But you see, that's the asset of having them around us. People who are living with babies, who are living with young people, are so blessed. Why is it the teachers, and I mean teachers who are teachers, not teachers who are professional robots, but teachers who are teachers, why is it that they are the happiest, most contented beings on the face of the earth? Because they're always dealing with young people. And they know that the young people really want to learn. And all that they have to do is to find out how they learn and then teach them that way. Not force them to learn the techniques that they have learned. Because the techniques that the teachers learned yesterday are no longer valid today. The body of knowledge on the face of the earth is now, what do they say, tremendously large compared to what it was just a few years ago. The body, that's what it did. It doubled in the beginning of the 21st century, it doubled. And now it has doubled again from just that time to now. Of course, it's just a hundred years later now, you know. It doubled again. Doubled again. Now, and the amount of knowledge, the amount of printed information that we have is utterly fantastic. There is no person on the face of the earth who could ever read it all, know it all, or even be aware of. You could maybe be aware of the indexes, but not the knowledge. And back in the days of Cicero and back in the days of the early philosophers and so forth, even before written word, the knowledge was quite great. I was interested in reading, I was reading about the Zarathustrans, which are quite lovely. We have good thoughts, good words, good deeds that come from the Zarathustran philosophy. And it said that when Alexander the Great, whom we have all regarded with great respect, that he lived a very short life, and that when he took over the other nations of the earth or the other countries, the first thing he did was to destroy their libraries. Destroy their libraries, destroy their educational institutions, and destroy their churches. That's the first thing he did. Well, now, he perhaps did more damage in doing that than in destroying the country, because he took their cultural heritage and put it to rest. Or maybe he did a better thing. Maybe he did a better thing. Maybe what he did was to cause them to start now thinking at a much higher level and not be tied to the old. People who venerate the old are not doing the old a service, a disservice. People who venerate antiquity, we say, well, we've got to know why archaeology tells us these things and why this here and why that and why the other. That's just casual, interesting information. I read an article about a young man, a very stupid young man. He was 13, and he created a business that he sold about a year or two later for about $3 or $4 million. And then he created another business. It was a software business, and it went along just fine. And then about 3 years later, he sold it for $300 million. And then he had a, and right now, he's like Bill Gates. He's not as wealthy as Bill Gates, but he's like Bill Gates. He's got a lot of money too. But he's working in a garage, like structure, you know, in a commercial area. And he wants to put the price of electricity down to the lowest possible point. And so he has designed an engine that will produce electricity from the sun, from the mirrors of the sun, the mirrors shining the sun, which heat up the inside of the engine and put it out for $1 per kilowatt, I think it is. If I'm right. But it's a fantastic figure. And it's probably the wrong term there, but he said that his little machine would cost $250, and it would produce electricity for a home for less than $1 a day. All the electricity it could use, anything, with all of the equipment that it has. And that 8 of them could take care of a manufacturing plant. $250 each. Now, what's that's 100? That's 5. That's 1,000. How many thousand would that come to? Just a couple thousand dollars. A couple thousand dollars, they'd have this device that provide electricity for a major manufacturing plant. Isn't that spectacular? Now, he has it so it's working. And he has it, he's now just polishing it and perfecting it and making it even better. But like he said, we reinvented the wheel. We didn't have the history on this, so we had to do it ourselves. And then after we did it, we found out that someone had already done it, but they hadn't pursued it. They had just left it floating. And the idea was floating, and they grabbed it, and they did it, and it was wonderful. You see, we don't need to reinvent the past. We don't need to go back and dwell on antiquity. Although it's charming and fascinating and interesting, If we could take our intentions and look at who we are and be delighted in this magnificent body that we have, in this magnificent spirit that we are, if we could look at our own assets of how wonderfully made we are, how wonderfully created we are, and know, this is the tough part now, how wonderfully created we are, and know that we created ourselves. You see, that's the big bugaboo. To know that you are the creator, that you are the one who brought forth into your world every experience you have, and that you can go even beyond that, because you have already gone beyond that, but dream your wildest dream. Let your imagination soar, and then come to the conclusion of who the absolute you really is. And you'd be amazed and delighted. But don't ever say to yourself, I can't. Don't ever say to yourself, I'm too busy, I don't have time, or whatever. Just go and do it. If the idea comes to you, run with it. Run with it. Get excited about it. Play with it. Let its imagination be yours, and then watch the magic of it as it takes place for you. Every asset I have seen in everyone around me. And that's true. So, I say to you, we've got the world at our fingertips. We have the allness in our heart. Let's enjoy and be ourselves and have fun like we never dreamed before. I love you. I love you. I love you.